So the air we all breathe is increasingly polluted by fossil fuels. That includes the products of fossil fuels like plastic, which is now so widespread that research suggests simply breathing can introduce microscopic fragments into your brain. The same thing is now happening in plants, and it could have global consequences. Ruth Freeman is Director of Research for Society, Research for Society for Research Ireland, and she joins us now. Ruth, plants inhaling microplastics?
Kind of, Anton, yes. So I suppose, as you say, we now know that microplastics are everywhere. And this is, you know, the breakdown of things like plastics in our clothes, our tyres, they're in our brains, they're at the top of deep sea trenches, they're at the top of Mount Everest. And now we know that they are probably also impacting on plants' ability to photosynthesize. And photosynthesis is a really important process for us because, of course, it's how plants convert carbon dioxide to sugar. And actually, you know, plants are responsible for capturing a lot of the carbon out of the atmosphere. I mean, at one point, kind of in the early discussions around climate change, some people speculated that maybe by putting more carbon into the atmosphere, we'd kind of be putting more plant food into the atmosphere and it might be good for growing crops and things. But what research is showing us now from places like Australia and China is that, you know, the other things that plants need, like nutrients and water, are probably limited, but also that plastics are doing things like blocking sunlight, potentially damaging soils, and blocking nutrient channels into plants. So in exactly the same way they might be blocking up some of our vessels, they're blocking the channels that plants use to
bring in. What's the mechanism for that? Because respiration, it's sort of self-evident. You could see how you could inhale those fragments. But plants don't do much in the way of respiring.
Well, we use the Krebs cycle. They use the Calvin cycle. So it's another sort of biochemical process. And they have enzymes that essentially grab molecules from the air. And of course, what's interesting is that photosynthesis is a really ancient process. It's been around for years. And before we had a lot of respiring plants, and they are respiring actually, there was very little oxygen in the air. So the oxygen that we have in the air today is as a result of, you know, hundreds of thousands of years of plants producing oxygen. In here lies perhaps a silver lining for us, because we are seeing problems with the efficiency of photosynthesis. In fact, it's not very efficient. Plants generally will only be converting maybe 5% of that energy they're getting from sun into kind of energy for themselves and into sugar. And that's because of this ancient origin where there was not much oxygen in the air. And one of the main enzymes that's involved in this respiration is called Rubisco. And what Rubisco can do is it can make mistakes. So rather than grabbing a carbon dioxide atom out of the air, it sometimes grabs an oxygen molecule by mistake. And of course, this is part of the reason why, you know, photosynthesis isn't necessarily fully efficient. But what's interesting now is that researchers from Oxford and the Fraunhofer Society are wondering, could we use some kind of gene editing on plants to make photosynthesis more efficient? And could that in some way help us to buy a bit of time to compensate for what are likely to be crop losses?
So that the same plant would process more CO2?
Would actually absorb more CO2 and do it more effectively and more efficiently. Because at the moment we're looking at up to, I mean, one estimate, and some are saying it may be an overestimate, that up to 14% of the world's staple food crops could be lost as a result of microplastics and the impact on plants. So not only do we need to worry about our own health, we need to worry about the health of plants.
While we're talking about the impacts of climate change and the increase in carbon in the atmosphere, one of those consequences, of course, melting sea ice. Global sea ice levels have just hit a record low.
They've hit a record low, and we've hit a record increase. So, you know, every year this year, we're breaking, every year for the last few years, we've been breaking records on temperatures, unfortunately. And this year, global temperatures are up 1.59 degrees above pre-industrial levels. So we've broken the 1.5 degree target that we hoped not to break. And that, as you say, has resulted in record low levels of sea ice. And of course, one of the key issues for people is rising sea levels, and about 40% of the world's people live near the coast. So this is something that we need to start thinking about. And of course, the strategies that we've used generally have been putting up barriers. So things like sea walls, trucking in sand, putting in kind of cement around coasts or walls. But, you know, this is incredibly expensive. And actually, these barriers themselves often erode. So we spend a lot putting them in and then they often get washed away with more storms and more severe weather. But again, I suppose there is some hope coming from science, and there's research from Northwestern University, and this is using a very mild zap of electricity on sand to reinforce coastline. So it sounds quite incredible. But these researchers were actually inspired by mollusks like oysters and mussels. And what they do is they use a chemical process to create their shells from minerals in the water and in the sand. So they convert minerals into calcium carbonate, which creates their shells. But here researchers are doing the same thing, but they're using electrical energy. So they're applying a very low voltage of energy, just a few volts, two or three, to marine sand. And that is converting some of the minerals around the sand into sort of a cement that is gluing the sand together. And what they're finding is this is actually a process that they can use to strengthen coastal areas.
One imagines it will be prohibitively energy intensive to apply on a large scale, will it?
Well, it's a very low current. I mean, only a couple of volts. And of course, the beauty of this is it doesn't do any damage to the marine life. It has been used in other contexts to strengthen some of the barriers around coral reefs without doing any damage to the creatures that live there. And of course, it can also, you can redo it. So if you sort of strengthen a barrier of sand using this method and it cracks, you can just go back and apply another volt a few years later and it will almost seal up the cracks itself. Cost-wise, it only costs a couple of dollars per meter cubed of this versus about $70 or $80 to do something with cement.
Remarkable. Ruth Freeman, thank you so much. That is Ruth Freeman, Director of Research for Society for Research Ireland.
Green Scene on the Pat Kenny Show with Repack. Does your business use the three bin system? Learn more about your legal recycling obligations at repack.ie.